Let's go over to the ballpark where it's our pleasure to have the company of a terrific baseball broadcaster and a best-selling author, Your Game, My Way. Steve Stone joins us on the McNeil and Spiegel Show. Hello, Stoney.
Hello, boys. I am in the palatial booth that they laughingly call the visitors' television booth here. It is a bit small, but Hawk and I, who don't usually sit close enough, will get to know one another very well here at the old ball yard.
A real treat.
And I'm overlooking, actually, it's a very nice-looking Wrigley Field these days.
Wow, painting the picture right there. You know,
they stole our Roger.
You are the right guy to talk to today, Stoney. Well, you usually are. But, you know, as you try to put Kerry Wood's career in perspective, he's going to retire either after the game today, maybe tomorrow, hopes to pitch today. We'll see what happens there. But as you put it in perspective, I was talking a little bit about phenoms and what it's like to see a 21-year-old come up to the big leagues and be as good and as dominant as he was. So start at the beginning and start at the good and what you thought the ceiling might have been at that moment in his career.
Well, the beginning was Al Goldust bringing me into his office. The Cubs had, I believe, the fourth pick in the draft the year that Kerry was eligible out of Texas. And it was a choice of Kerry or Ariel Prieto, if you remember that name. And he was a Cuban pitcher who was major league ready at the time. Al showed me some video at the time from Kerry Wood in a high school game, and I was watching that nose-to-toes curveball and that fastball at 95, 96 in his high school days, and I said, there's no comparison. This is a guy that you have to take. I mean, I said that stuff was just electric, and he looks like he has the body type to be able to throw very well. As he gets bigger and stronger, he's probably going to throw a whole lot harder, which is what happened. And well, fast forward, they did indeed pick him. Fast forward to the 20-strikeout game, which was a phenomenon. Here's a kid in his fifth major league start, 1998, I believe it was, and there wasn't a team ever assembled, not the 27 Yankees, not the Big Red Machine, none of the great teams, the hitting teams ever assembled, that could have hit Kerry on that day. I'd never seen stuff like that. Not only did the fastball just explode, but both his curve and slider were unhittable. I mean, he was throwing pitches to guys. I remember Derek Bell at the time. He swung at a pitch. It looked like he was using an axe to chop some wood. It was one of those days where some pretty good hitters, Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio, these guys had no shot whatsoever against him. And so I remember doing the interview after the game. 20 strikeouts, no walks, one little base hit off Kevin Orey's glove at third base, and Kerry was just shaking during the interview because he had so much adrenaline, obviously, as you would at that point. And you really felt that the sky was the limit. But one of the things that always troubled me about him was he was a fireballer who threw drastically across his body. And there's one of the things that where I ran afoul of Kerry at times was just saying that, you know, you cannot pitch like that and be as successful as you'd like to be. And I think if you're going to encapsulate what was a long career and a guy that had many incarnations and battled back from some very serious injuries to actually throw the ball pretty well again, you would say that he kind of epitomized what a lot of the Cubs fans wanted from him and a lot of what the Cubs teams have been. You looked at Kerry, you looked at that great skill, but you always wanted him to be better. You always thought, regardless of what he did, that he should be better. And unfortunately, his body didn't allow him to be any better. That motion did not allow him to be any better. You know, one year he went 14-11, and that was the best. That was the best he won, 14 games. And this is a guy gifted with an arm that comes along very, very rarely and stuff that you hardly ever see even today. And yet, when it's all said and done, for every one of those game fives in Atlanta where he cemented his legacy as a Cub icon, you're always going to have that game seven here at Wrigley Field against the Florida Marlins where he just didn't get the job done. And so, you know, whenever it is that he does choose to retire, whether it's today, whether he can pitch an inning today and retire, or tomorrow, whenever it is, his place in the pantheon of Cubs history will be cemented by 20 strikeouts, a guy that the fans always loved, but a guy that the fans always look for a little bit more.
It's unsurprisingly well said from Steve Stone right there about Kerry Wood. Want to follow up on the mechanics, and you were not alone in noticing that early and questioning that early. And every time that somebody says, well, his body gave up on him or just wouldn't allow it, and you know, what are you going to do? He just got hurt. A little part of me always wonders whether he was stubborn, you know, whether he actually worked on it as he could have or should have. Or is it just such an inexact thing, Steve, that some people do survive with that motion? Some people do pitch for years and years and do not encounter the problems that Kerry had. Was he stubborn, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think most of the people who have success at any level before they get to the major leagues, success at every level, they get a little stubborn because how I did it is how I do it, and I'll keep on doing it until they show me I can't do it. But I have never seen over a prolonged period of time a starter who threw close to 100 miles an hour and could get it there consistently as Kerry could. I've never seen a guy like that throw across his body as drastically as Kerry did and hold up. I've seen a lot of sinker ballers who throw across their body and hold up. Rick Russell was one of the guys that was able to do that. You remember John Tudor from years back. There's a lot of sinker ballers throw across their body. It actually helps the ball sink. But when a fireballer does that, it just puts an abnormal amount of strain and torque on the arm. Obviously, we know that he came back to pitch in 98 against Atlanta. And threw very well, and then had Tommy John surgery after that. Came back from that. I had warned Andy McPhail that he's going to have shoulder surgery. It's just that's what's going to happen after the arm heals and after he comes back and after he goes through his rehab. And he came back, and he was throwing the ball, you know, about as well as you could throw the ball. In fact, 2001, he was 12-6, I think, 12-11 in 2002. 2003, he was 14-11. And that was, you know, that turned out to be his banner year. But, again, he never quite got over that motion. And I saw him in spring training. Larry Rothschild would draw a line and say, look, this is where I want your front foot to hit. And he could actually do it in sidelines, and he could do it in spring training for a while. But he always reverted back to that very exaggerated steps toward third base and then throw home. That's what throwing across your body is. You might remember Darren Dreyfuss, who
it's his birthday today.
He had a great future, and his arm blew out, and then his knee blew out, and then his shoulder blew out, and he had the same type of motion. He was another guy. I mean, the Dodgers signed him for huge money, 5 for $55 at the time, and yet he was a guy that just fell apart. The Tigers drafted a left-hander that everybody said was going to be the next great left-handed starter in baseball. His name was Andrew Miller. I saw him pitch one game, and I went home, and there were some Tiger fans on the elevator. And I said, how'd you like your left-hander? He said, we love that guy. I said, well, like him quickly because he will blow out. Because he threw 98 across his body. And Andrew Miller, if you take a look at what he's done, he just never really accomplished what he should have. That's a very destructive motion, and, Kerry stayed around a long time with that motion, but again, never quite got out of himself what was there.
Steve Stone pitched for both the Cubs and White Sox. He is broadcast for both the Cubs and White Sox. He's at Wrigley right now on the score. Second hour of the show being sponsored by Menards. Save big money at Menards. I want to get to the White Sox pitching staff in a moment, but quick question on Woody. Should it offend a baseball purist's sensibilities, Steve, that they're going to give him seemingly an opportunity to throw one more time today?
No, I don't think so. I think that, look, this is a team that was not scheduled to win this year, even though the division is fair to partly woeful. I could say the same thing about the division that the Sox are in. The Central in both leagues really doesn't have that one dominant team to this point. St. Louis appears to be the best in the division, but realistically, when you take a look at the last 10 from the entire divisions of both, the best records over the last 10 are Kansas City, and they're 15-22, and Pittsburgh, and they're 18-20. So teams can't get out of their own way in the Central. My feeling is if Carey, who has meant so much to the fans of this team, wants to pitch one more inning, let him pitch one more inning. Is it going to cost him the pennant? I don't think yeah, so.
Exactly.
Stoney, what's wrong with John Danks?
It's a great question.
I wish I could tell you that. I'm not sure he's 100% healthy. I don't know that. But, you know, when you take a look at a guy who's always had pretty decent control, and then he's either one wild in the strike zone or two, he just can't seem to get everything together. I mean, I never see his curveball, his changeup, and his fastball working in the same day. He's had a couple of decent games, but overall, he just hasn't been that guy that we thought could take the next step. I mean, his ERA this year is 6.46. He's made 8 starts. He's given up way too many hits per inning pitched. The startling factor with Johnny Danks is that he has 26 strikeouts and 22 walks. I mean, in 47 and a third innings, if he's entirely healthy, then those aren't the kind of numbers you would associate with a guy who should be coming into his prime as a pitcher. So I know he takes the ball. I know he goes out there. I know he gives you the best that he can, but he's one of those guys that if this Sox team is going to pick it up, John Danks, Phillip Umber, these are a couple of guys that really have to start to throw the ball well. Gavin Floyd has thrown the ball well, with the exception of the last time out. The previous four were very good. So I think the bullpen's going to take care of itself. And by the way, Nate Jones is emerging as a guy with closer stuff that's going to be in more and more important games. So keep your eye on him.
Yeah, with Crane back, they might have three very good effective righties out there. Last one from me, Stoney. Dion Viciado's on fire. Lineup is here. Dunn in left, as expected. Rios in right. So no Viciado. Brent Morrell at third base. I understand not asking Viciado to play third. He hasn't done it in a long time. And right. I get it, but boy, it'd be nice to get him in here. Do you sit Rios and put Viciado out there against Mahalem? Or sit Dunn, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I think that that's probably a possibility. as far as Adam is concerned, you take a look at what he's meant to this team in the middle. Many times he gets up and he'll hit a home run in his first at bat, or yesterday came through with a couple RBIs in a key situation. And, you know, he's doing a pretty good job this year. Adam Dunn's job, he'll strike out, yes. He will walk, yes. But you don't care what the batting average says. He's out there to drive in runs. He's driven in 30 of them. He leads the ball club. So it's pretty tough to sit that bat on the bench. And also, he has been hitting left-handers a whole lot better this year than last. Of course, at one point, when you're 3-for-82, you should be a little bit better than last year against left-handers. But he's getting much better swings. And yeah, we'll have to see what Robin decides. I guess it all depends on what happens. What happens in today's game? I mean, how's the team look? How's it reacting with Dunn in left field? He's played left field here before. Obviously, when he was with Cincinnati, he was a left fielder in this ballpark, so it's not new to him.
Steve, we always enjoy having you on. You'll be on with Bernsie after the game today, and when I see you at the cell next, I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you and let you finish your thoughts on Paul Byrd, the only Angel to beat the White Sox in the 0-5 postseason.
Yeah, he brought it up the other night, and you wanted more.
You know, he had the same motion I had. I really respect that. For a guy with as bad a stuff as he had, I had the same stuff. I love Paul Byrd.
Yeah, I know. Well, let me tell you about 1953. Stoney, love you, man. Thanks.
Okay, guys. Take
See
care.
You later. Steve Stone at Wrigley Field.